Hello, welcome back to the Matt Pfeiffer Experience. I am your host, Matthew Pfeiffer, and today I have on a very special guest, Maya Schulman from the Schulman Family Law Group, all the way out in Calabasas, California. If you've been following me for a while, if you've listened to my podcast for a while, you know that I don't just bring on any regular person. You know, I always make sure that I bring on attorneys that I would recommend for friends and family, myself. And so I'm very excited to bring her on and to have this conversation with you. I'm going to turn it over to my guest. I'm going to let her introduce herself. Maya, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate being asked to be here. We'll have fun. I do like talking about what I do. My friends don't always understand why, but I do. So I fell into family law sort of by default. I never planned on doing this. Was not my chosen occupation, was not in my dreams, but yet I'm here and that's what I'm doing. So I do family law, which is divorces, also do adoptions, also do surrogacy agreements, and also do pre and post-nuptial conversations with clients. And that's my business.
You are a woman of many trades, as they say. So you have a lot of different skills, a lot of different experience, and you've been doing this for quite some time, and you said that you backed into this, and I think that is something that I think most family law attorneys that I talk to say, and they share that they backed into it. They didn't start out, you know, down this path. Is there any do you kind of feel, is there any reason why people typically back into family law, whether they might go and kind of choose to go into another area, but then find that family law is a better fit for them? What was that like for you?
Mine, I think I would venture to say mine was a little different. When I went to law school, family law was not offered. We were not taught family law in law school. We did take then a required subject, community property, which was on the bar, but not family law. So if you do family law, that is something that you learn on your own later on, or something you just fall into. And what I mentioned before, when I went on my own, my first referral was a divorce case, and that's how it started. So you learn.
Were you nervous with that very first case?
Very, very nervous. Very nervous. But I said to myself, why not? Let me learn it. And so I did, and I learned it, and I'm pretty good at it.
Yep. I'm curious, and I'm going to segue this over into another conversation. That we talked about when it comes to people that may not have a lot of experience and things like that. But I wanted to ask you, how did that first case go for you? You know, did you end up mediating or settling outside of court, or how was that first case for you?
That first case was a lot of learning experience. I was fortunate enough that my then landlord was a family law attorney. So I actually had to just walk down the hall, knock on his door, and ask him a whole bunch of questions, because this is not a DIY. Never want to go alone into family law. That is not good for you. That is not good for your clients. And that's where you're going to make mistakes. So if you're going to do family law, you need to learn it and you need to ask questions. And that's how I did it.
Yeah. And ultimately, because you're right, because you're dealing with other people's, not only their livelihoods, but potentially for the next two or possibly three decades of their life, especially if they have young children.
Of young children, there's child support, there's spousal support, and everything else that comes in between for many years.
Yeah. And you mentioned how important it is to make sure that your lawyer or that the case is done well the first time, and that you have a lot of experience of cleaning up other people's messes. And, you know, just sometimes, you didn't say this directly, but sometimes attorneys can get kind of sloppy if they don't have a lot of experience and things of that nature. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is like? And what are some signs that someone might say, you know what, maybe my attorney's not representing me very well?
Couple of things here. First of all, it's not just lawyers. Yeah. You may remember there used to be an entity that was called We the People. So these are people who profess to be paralegals, and they advertise that they will finish your divorce in under $500. Well, guess what? The filing fee alone is $435. So I don't know how that is even possible. Second point is paralegals are not supposed to give you legal advice. Right. The best they can do, they can help you draft a document. But if you don't know what should be in that document, that what good is it for you? You will have paid money, you will have gotten no legal advice, and you will have been no better off with the documents that somebody drafted for you that are useless.
Right.
Okay? And so other issue is many attorneys, especially young attorneys, they presume that family law is just checking the boxes. Well, after having done this for however many years, I will tell you, there's nothing further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just checking the boxes. There's thinking that goes into checking the boxes. And if you check the wrong box, it will come and bite you in the behind in the worst way possible. So don't do it. Find somebody who knows what they do. Find somebody who knows the topic you need help on. And only then proceed with hiring that person.
When someone is looking for an attorney and they're interviewing an attorney, what are some questions that they might ask, or how would they know that attorney might be a good fit for them or might be a bad fit for them?
They should be asking specifically about their case. Mm-hmm. I very often have clients who call me and say, I have been with this lawyer for 2 years. My case has not moved. Well, that's indication number one, because 2 years is a long time. And in 2 years, your case should be, if not solved completely, but should be well on the way and being solved. And if it's not being solved, what more do you want? That is your answer. It's time to change.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that's a difficult conversation for people to have with their attorney.
But they should.
Uh-huh.
Because the choices, the options are limited.
Yeah.
Option number one, as I tell my clients or anybody who calls for a consultation, you have two choices. Number one, you do nothing. But then nothing changes.
Yeah.
Option number two, you do something, you take control of your life, make the change, finish the case, move on.
Yeah. What are so let's talk about that back end of it. You know, if someone has bad representation, or your experience when someone has had bad representation and they get that final divorce paperwork. And quite often you've seen it. I've seen it with people that I've worked with whenever I was practicing therapy, that all of a sudden their divorce case is a mess and they now need modifications because of, you know, they now this, you know, sometimes if it was an abusive relationship, that person now has power and control over them, or, I've just seen, you know, train wrecks when it comes to a lot of people's divorces where, they can't decide on houses and cars are still in people's names and things of that nature. From your experience, what is it like being that attorney who has to kind of clean up someone else's mess? And what are some things or some common themes that maybe you've seen through those type of processes?
I do a lot of cleaning up, unfortunately, for clients. I don't necessarily look for it. They come to me. The problem is, if the case is not handled well, not everything can be changed. Some things will never be able to be changed. And this is why, not to repeat it again, but this is why it is so important to get it done right the first time, because there may not be a do-over possible. Or if it's possible, it's going to cost you five times more money.
I love the fact that you said that sometimes it's not possible, because I've seen and I've heard of situations like that. Because one of the things I try to tell people and try to explain to people, and I could be 100% wrong, I'd love your feedback on this, is that a judge isn't going to rule against their own judgment. You know, if they finalize something and they said that this is, especially with most divorces being situations that you settled outside, so it was something that you also agreed to. And then to turn around a year, 2 years later and say, this isn't working, it goes back to something that you kind of alluded to, that, you know, you do have to burden some of that responsibility for not taking ownership over something that was very important to you.
That's again, that's very true. Are you sure you're not a lawyer?
I should be, you know, maybe I should be.
Maybe you should be because you're hitting all the right subjects and it's impressive. So when the judgment is finished, when the judge signs off on it, the judge presumes and expects the case is finished. Okay? If one party then thinks they made a mistake, there are two possible ways to address it. And it's much more detailed that we have time for, so I'll speak in general terms. One way to address a mistake is to file a declaration and say, I made a mistake, I need a do-over. Well, if you made a mistake, if a party made a mistake, you have 6 months to do it. If a lawyer made a mistake, they have longer time to do it. But I will tell you, I have very rarely seen a case where a lawyer signs a declaration that he or she made a mistake, because that means they committed malpractice.
Yeah.
Another way to address a mistake is to file an appeal. Appeals are expensive. Just a retainer to hire an appellate attorney is anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000. And that's just to hire an attorney. I'm not saying the entire appeal will cost that. It will probably cost more. So back to what you brought up before, do it right. Do it right the first time. Make sure you find somebody you want to work with.
One of the things about, you know, I talked to someone else about appeals, and I've had a lot of people talk to me about appeals. And something, and everyone always wants an appeal. But one of the things about appeals is that sometimes you don't even have grounds for an appeal, from what I understand. What would those grounds look like?
The final judgment should always be appealable. But again, not on all the issues.
Yeah.
Remember, an appellate court will not disturb the order from the lower court absent an abuse of discretion or a mistake in law. And those are very limited grounds on which to appeal. Nothing else will be disturbed. So it's kind of a side subject. I tell my clients when they come to me, I ask them, do not watch any legal shows on TV.
Yeah.
There are very few good ones. And bad ones will just ruin your impression of court. Going to court is not fun. It only looks fun on TV. Yeah. So don't watch those shows. Do not expect you're going to be able to appeal your decision, because that's the step number two. Step number one is to do it right the first time.
I feel like you and I are cut from the same cloth, because I tell people something very similar, but on social media. I tell people to stop paying attention to what people are saying about their own court case, whether it doesn't matter if they won it, doesn't matter if they lost it. You hear a lot of women say, you know, they're biased against me because, you know, I'm a woman. You also hear men saying the exact same thing, when in reality, every single situation is very different. And every single person who is talking about their case online, oftentimes are leaving a lot of the nuance out of their story, you know, the reason why the certain decisions were made. And a lot of times, in most situations, we're leaving out the whole fact that they settled on the case to begin with.
Well, you've been doing this longer than me. That's my impression.
Yeah.
You know what you're talking about. So here's the thing. Family law is so much more fact-specific than anything else. There are no two cases that are alike. They're just not. And they're not alike because you is you and I'm not you. So why should my case be like your case and vice versa? I'll give you another great example. I had a surrogacy consultation where two women separately came to me, and one of them said, well, I saw this contract online. Why can't I just use it for me?
Yeah.
And my answer is, well, that's that person online is not you.
Yeah.
You can't use somebody cookie cutter document and expect it's going to fit your case.
Right.
So no, and no, and no again. I hate to be the naysayer, but I guess I'm going to have to be.
Yeah. You bring up an interesting subject that most people don't have a lot of knowledge about is surrogacy. And, you know, that's something, surrogacy by itself, you know, has a lot of nuance, and you obviously have a lot of knowledge, a lot of background in surrogacy. But when you start crossing over surrogacy and family court, you know, now we're really getting into the thick of things. Can you talk about your experience just in surrogacy in general, but then also where there might be a surrogacy and then all of a sudden the couple is not working, or they're going to split, or there's going to be a divorce, and what that looks like?
So my experience in surrogacy, I mentioned I do have some background in medical field. Uh-huh. I did go to medical school. I did not finish. But I do know enough lingo that allows me to kind of swim in the waters and know what I'm talking about. So yeah. That comes easy for me. That is not something I had to learn separately. So surrogacy and family law, there's a lot of crossovers. And the perfect example is exactly what you mentioned. Let's say a couple begins a surrogacy journey,
yeah.
Okay? And then they have embryos left over. Because most surrogacies, when they go through in vitros and whatnot, there will be embryos that are not used because we end up with multiple embryos. The question becomes, what do we do with the embryos that are left behind? And the choices are as follows. You can destroy them. You can donate them to research, or you can donate them to other couples who can't have children without an assisted technique. Mm-hmm. And that's when you get into family law with surrogacy. So surrogates and parents, you look to intent as to who is the intended parent versus the biological parent. And then for embryos, if you donate the embryo, both parents have to consent. And if they don't, you end up in court. So there's your crossover.
Wow. I can imagine, you know, you ending up in court. I imagine that sort of litigation could possibly last for years because if both people are just hell-bent that the embryo belongs to them, I can't imagine that is a, you know, a short time frame for that type of court case.
Not a short time frame. No cases have a short time frame. Appeals take a very long time. And you have to think before you go to court, is that the place where you want to end up? Because court cases take a long, long time. I have a case right now that is going on 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Not by fault of my client, uh-huh. Not by fault of the judge. But it had happened that the other side has changed lawyers one too many times, and we're now just finishing and coming to the finish line to finish the case. So if you think the judge is going to welcome you with open arms next week, think again.
Yeah.
You will get to see the judge, if you're lucky, at the end of 2024, and then some.
One of the things when you are talking about embryos and surrogacy and that sort of thing, and the length of time it takes for people to get through the whole court process. One of the things that, from what I understand, doesn't always work this way, because I've seen and heard some crazy things, but what can kind of simplify that process are prenups. And that's something else that you deal with. But I think there's a lot of misconception with prenups, from what I understand. A lot of times people think that if you have a prenup, that the person who has less in the couple is the one that ends up with nothing. Is that accurate, or are there prenups where it might be structured like in tiers, or what's the truth behind prenups?
I think that statement is accurate necessarily. So prenups is your perfect example of how negotiations should take place.
Yeah.
Because what's a prenup? Prenup is a contract, right? So there has to be two parties to a contract. And the basic premise of a contract is there has to be a meeting of the minds.
Yeah.
Okay? So if two people don't agree, you will not have a contract, and you will not have a prenup or postnup. So that's your negotiations. So first of all, for a prenup or a postnup, each side has to have independent legal counsel. Let the lawyers do the talking. That's what they're for. God knows there's no shortage of legal professionals in the U.S. We know that, right? Especially in California. But also one way to expedite this with prenups, postnups, and any court cases, set this up for a private mediation. Take it outside of court. Do it on a private basis. Pick a judge you want. Go see that judge in the judge's office on the day you want, not the date the court assigns you, and be a grown-up. Have a conversation.
Yeah. There's a lot of people who are completely against prenups, who say, that it's just a piece of paper, or that, that it's not going to help them out at all, and things of that nature. Or maybe the two people met when they were young and they don't have a lot. Do you feel like prenups should be, I don't want to say mandatory, but do you think prenups should be discussed in all marriages before people walk down that aisle?
I think it's a very individual question. Mm-hmm. I don't think they need to be mandatory, but I also don't think they need to be discounted. Yeah. A lot of times it's the bride and groom's parents who kind of push the prenups on the young kids because the parents know better, right? We're older, wiser, been there, done that kind of thing. So I often have cases where it's the parents who push that on the youngsters, but it is a piece of paper. Yeah. So is the marriage license.
Yeah.
It depends how you look at it. It depends what you do with it. It doesn't mean that you will get divorced if you do a prenup. But it also does not mean that you live together for 62 years if you get married. It's very, very individual. Yeah. Very individual.
You brought up a term before we started recording that I had only heard a couple of other times that I'm interested in hearing a lot more about. And that's a cohabitation agreement. And we hear so much more about people cohabitating. Some people feel like it's necessary before they walk down the aisle. But then you started over the last few years, over the last, I would say, 10 plus years, you started hearing more and more about how people would cohabitate. But then when they would break up, it was still very similar to a divorce, especially if they had kids. You have situations where there's people who, common law marriage states and that sort of thing. Can you talk to us a little bit more about a cohabitation agreement, what they look like, and, what type of situation someone might consider one?
Yes, happy to do so. So first of all, I'd like to point out two differences. Number one, prenups, there are two things that never go into, and that's child custody and child support. Ever, 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 never. Because you cannot take that power from the court, so they do not get involved in the prenups and the postnups, off limits. Cohabitation agreements are agreements between two people who just don't want to be married, but they want to define their respective property rights. Again, children don't come into that conversation.
Right.
Child support does not come into that conversation, but the property rights do. Because it's the cohabitation agreement and the parties are not married, that's also not family law. That becomes civil law. Wow. So going back to where we started, find the right professional. Don't think it's one size fits all, because it's not.
Yeah. And just like you were talking about before, finding the wrong professional and it not being done properly the first time could end up costing you down the road. You bring up a great point that a lot of times people try to save money up front, but then it ends up costing them so much more money later on down the road.
Absolutely. And it proves itself over and over again.
Yeah.
You can't invent something new. It's been done before. You want to save money. The best way to save money is to find the right professional. That's how you save money.
Yeah.
Okay. I would much rather work with an experienced lawyer on the other side than a newbie who doesn't know what he or she is doing and there's a lot of huffing and puffing and nothing gets done. So.
Maya, this has been great. You are a wealth of knowledge. You have so much experience. I know that a lot of people are going to learn a lot from your episode. Can you tell people where they can find you at, your possible website or any of your social media platforms that people, if they want to connect with you?
Of course, you know, Google is the friend or a foe. It depends how you use it. All you have to do is you plug my name into Google search, but if not, it is www.sflg.us, Shulman Family Law Group.us, as in us. And I'm here. Easy to find, easy to reach me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Facebook, I'm in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So happy to talk to you anytime, and it's been fun. Thank you so much. Yeah.
And for those of you who are watching, regardless if you're watching on YouTube or maybe you're listening on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, all of her information is going to be in the show notes. And if you could go down into the show notes, or if you could comment and let us know a takeaway or something that maybe you learned from today, you can also go over to her social media platform, over to Instagram or any of the other places that she mentioned, and you can just comment or send her DMs, show her some love, give her a follow. Especially for those of you who are over in California, you have a friend or family member that might, or maybe you yourself might need representation, you know, Maya could be potentially be a good fit for you. With all that being said, thank you very much, and I will see you all in the next episode. You guys have a good one.